Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Let's go. Hello, Claire. Welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Hello. I'm good. I'm nursing a cold, so sorry about any coughing. But yeah, I'm really, really good. Thank you.
Good, good. Me too. So we've got two bunged up people on the podcast today. But yeah, I would love for the listeners to know a little bit more about you. So can you tell us a little bit more about you, Claire, and how you started running?
Well, it's a funny story because I, as I say in my book at the start, it's called The Ultimate Trail Running Handbook. I actually hated running at school. So I am like the most unlikely person to have written a book about running. But I now love running. And basically at school, running was, you know, always really competitive. It was in the middle of winter or the middle of summer, and it was just really uncomfortable. People would shout at you like, go faster, go faster. It just wasn't a great experience. So I hated running at school. But then at university, I started drinking a little bit too much beer, noticed a little bit of extra weight happening, and running's like the quickest and easiest thing you can do to kind of get healthier and shed a little bit of weight. So I actually started running at uni, and I used to be so phobic that if I had planned to run that evening or something like that, I'd be really nervous all day and I couldn't really think of anything else. But I still did it. And I think the best way to get over a phobia is to just do the thing, isn't it, in small increments. So I signed up for a 10k run. I did the Manchester 10k, then I did the Stockport 10 miler, and I just gradually started doing running races. I was never very good at it or anything like that, but and then I moved to Peterborough to get a job on Trail magazine, which is the hiking and mountaineering magazine. So I've always been really into hiking, outdoors. I did a lot of mountain biking and swimming, so it was really natural for me to want to get a job in the great outdoors. So I got this job on Trail magazine. So I was doing lots of hiking. And then during that time, the opportunity came up to start a magazine called Trail Running Magazine, because the market was kind of going into trail running and off-road running at that point. And they were like, Claire, you do some running, don't you? You can edit this magazine. So I ended up editing this magazine about running, not being a very experienced runner myself, but I used to go up to the Lake District and do the Lake and Trails series up there. So it's kind of like 9 or 10 miles on the trails, and I absolutely loved it because it was so different from school running. It was just loads of people like herring off into the countryside, and there was no real like emphasis on time. It was just all about enjoying yourself, looking at the nice views. The downhills were really incredibly fun as well, because of my mountain biking background and my hiking background. I really enjoyed like skipping down the hills and finding the best routes. So that was really enjoyable. And I just found that running became, it was still hard and challenging, but it was really enjoyable. So I edited Trail Running Magazine for 7 years. And then I I started to, you know, when you get to that point where you're kind of telling everybody else to do the work, you're like getting higher up in the management and you stop doing the actual thing which you loved in the first place. So I left that job and I started my own YouTube channel, which is called Wild Ginger Running, and it's all about trail and ultra running. And it's basically Trail Running Magazine in video form online for everybody to see. So it's all free to watch. And then I decided to put all my knowledge into a book. So that's where I am now. And I'm really, really enjoying it.
Amazing. What an incredible story. It just goes to show that just because of school and in one dimension, you can enjoy running in another dimension later on in life.
Yeah, I think it's because I discovered that running was actually jogging. Do you know what I mean? Like running at school was like running, like balls out, like blasting, like try and go as fast as you can. But actually running doesn't have to be like that. You can enjoy it just jogging and it doesn't have to be this horrendous activity.
Yeah. So going on to that then, what do you love most about running?
Oh, I love the feeling that it gives you. Especially running off-road. I know that a lot of people, when they start running, it's on the roads and pavements, but I really like to explore new places when I run. So if I find a path locally that I've not actually been on before, that will make my day. So I love exploring. I love the feeling that it gives you to just feel the wind on your face. And if it's, you know, slightly raining, you know, that's like a facial, isn't it? So I love the fact that it just takes you away from whatever you were doing. Like, you know, if you're stressed with work or you've got some problems, you know, financial problems, family problems, things you need to think through, you just get to escape on the run and ideas come and ways of solving problems come to you just naturally, and you feel good after you've done a run. So that's why you don't always feel like going on a run, but you always feel good coming back from a run, I find.
Yeah, totally agree, and I'm with you on that. Sometimes it's just the different elements. You just appreciate the outside, and yeah, I definitely come up with some of my best ideas when I'm on a run. I have to get out my phone and get my notes out and I have to start writing them down. So I've come up with an idea and this is great. So no, that's fantastic. Now, I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer this question because it sounds like there's going to be a lot, but what would you say is your biggest running achievement?
Well, kind of two things. Like, one is doing the Bob Graham round. I don't know if anybody in your audience, I'll explain. It's 42 mountains in the Lake District and it's 65 miles and there's about 8,000 meters of ascent and it's all kind of small paths and things. And it's a real effort to get round. There's a 24-hour club that you get in if you do it under 24 hours. I did it in 26 and a half hours, so not quite in the club, but I still did it. And it's the hardest, probably to this day, it's the hardest physical thing I've ever done in my life. So I'm very proud of myself for getting around that. But then more recently, just 2 weeks ago, I did the Rutland Half Marathon, which is on a mixture of kind of pavementy type, it's not on roads, but it's pavements and kind of gritty tracks and it's quite hilly. And I did that. It's the first half marathon that I've done since having a baby in 2021. So I was really pleased that I was able to train consistently, get around that. And I actually did it in just under 2 hours by 15 seconds. So I was just really proud of myself. And I just really enjoyed it. I don't do many races these days, so compared to what I used to. So I'm just really pleased that I got out there. It was an out and back course, so you could see all your friends. Like it was local, so all my running club were there. So I was like, oh hey, you're right. And I was just like, all the people doing the marathon, you saw some of the slower ones of those and you were like, oh my god, you're doing the marathon, that's brilliant. So I think part of the energy that I get from running is seeing other people run and cheering them on. So I just really enjoyed the whole race. It was a beautiful day and Rutland Water was just stunning. Beautiful blue lake and reservoir, and the trees were green, like just coming to autumn. It's just a beautiful place to be, and it was hard, it was challenging, but I just really enjoyed it.
Oh wow, two different kind of achievements there, but also very well kind of like respectful in the same way, you know, like a massive ultra, but then your first half after your baby, and you know, I'm sure like it meant a lot to you, and sometimes that can be a bigger achievement in itself, can't it, than doing more miles or something like that.
Yeah, because I had all the time in the world to train for Bob Graham, but for the half marathon, you know, sleep deprivation, trying to fit your job in, nursery illness. Like, I had to take him to A&E the other day because he dropped a toy on his toe and we thought it was broken. All these things. You just don't get time to train like you used to.
Is it that you get all these worries in life, but then you add a child into the mix and they give you a little one more worries, yeah, things to worry about.
Yeah, you think you've got no time before you have children, then after you have children, you're like, no, I had so much time.
Yeah, I've heard that before. So, so what would you say your favourite race distance is and why?
I was reading this question. It's really tough to think. I think I quite like the kind of just over the marathony type distance, like 30 miles, because there's a lot of 50k ultras, which is pretty much 30, that's 31 miles. It's pretty much 30 miles. And I find that you can kind of keep yourself in marathon fitness throughout the year, most times of the year. I'm just saying this, I used to be, you know, fit enough to crack out, you know, like 20 to 30 mile run should I need to. So you can kind of maintain that kind of training if you're quite a dedicated runner and fitness enthusiast. So I think 30 miles is good because it doesn't take too long, even if it's in the mountains. Like in the mountains, it could take you a whole day. You know, like the Manx Mountain Marathon takes me, like, it took me 8 hours when I did that. And that was 30 miles with a lot of ascent. So yeah, you're like out for the whole day. It's like a day trip kind of thing. You see a lot, but it's not so far that you're going to, like, if you've got blisters, it's going to cause you horrendous problems, or, you know, that you're going to get an injury, or, you know, it's just enough, I think, just enough, a day trip out.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because when I get a lot of like road runners on here and I say, what's your favorite race distance? A lot of them will say like the half, and they say exactly the same thing, in the sense that you said, oh yeah, for 30 miles you can do 20 to 30 miles and keep fit. And people that say that about half marathons, they're like, yeah, you can do 10 miles and keep half marathon fit. So there's that comparison there.
Yeah.
In the same respects.
I think it's a bit different road to trail, though, because I think trail with less emphasis on the, like, the pace and the time, and more emphasis on just kind of jogging along, really enjoying the views and eating some food and chatting to people. So I think that keeping yourself marathon fit for trails is a bit similar to keeping yourself road running fit for half marathons, because the effort that I put in that half marathon the other week at Rutland Water was really like up here. That's no way near the effort that I would put in doing a 30 miler on trails. I'd just be jogging along. I was probably more broken after the half than I was after a 30 on trails, just because you just go a bit more slowly and just jog along, really.
Well, yeah, I watched a video earlier today, actually, whilst I was doing some work. I like watching YouTube videos whilst I'm working, and I watched Ben Parks' girlfriend Sarah. She did Chester at the weekend, so I wanted to see how she got on. And she finished, and Ben was like, what was that in comparison, like, what road marathon v ultra? She was like, I'll take an ultra any day.
Yeah, it's easier, honestly. I think people have this big thing in their heads about ultra running being really hard, and I think that's because all the running they've done is like my school running. It's like half marathon where you're going for like sub 2, sub 4, even, you know, sub 3:30 for that, you know, sub 3 marathon. That's hard work. The training is hard work. Like, if you're doing, you know, like a 19 minute park run all the time, it's hard work. I'd rather run an easy ultra just jogging along just to complete it than a fast park run, to be honest.
Yeah, I think with that, then it takes time to train the body and the mind to get round to that, because one, you have to train the body to get used to running a lot slower than what you're used to, so get your mind in that position to also run slower, because it's like you say, just road and like trails are just completely different things. So
yeah, I mean, you can run really fast on the trails if you want to, but the ethos is more towards the whole jogging along business.
What would you say your go-to breakfast is before a race?
Definitely porridge. It's a very specific recipe: porridge with sultanas in, half a banana, a blob of peanut butter, and soy milk, sweetened soy milk. I think that's everything. Yeah, cook for 2 minutes in the microwave. Yum, yum, yum. Have it every single morning.
What, even race day and non-race day, every morning?
Yeah, I'm very boring with a breakfast. Although actually this morning I did feel like a change. So I had 2 pieces of toast with Nutella on top.
Good stuff. Yeah, I am very mood influenced. So there was like probably a couple of years ago I'd have porridge. I think like I'm more porridge in the winter. And then in the summer, a bit more like bread or like toast or smoothies. I love that's the thing. Ooh, smoothies.
I love smoothie. If you were to come to my house and make me a smoothie for breakfast every morning, I'd love that. But I can't personally be bothered with all the like putting it in, swidging it up, and then cleaning it all. Porridge in the bowl in the dishwasher. Very easy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like use like, you know, 101 ingredients like some recipes are. It's just a couple of things in there, and yeah, good to go. Amazing. So can you remember a bad race experience but also something you learned from it?
Yes, definitely, because in 2018 I attempted to do the Cape Wrath Ultra, which is 260 miles along the west coast of Scotland, and it's over 8 days. So it's a multi-day race. You sleep in tents, and this whole like the race like moves every evening, and they set up the tents for you. You run with a little day pack and they move your bag along. There's like 200, maybe 300 people doing this race. I got to day four and I really didn't enjoy day four at all because I had really bad blisters on my little toe because the shoes were sort of, my feet had swollen up and I had got like the correct size, but I should have bought a size bigger because of my foot swell. And so my little toe was just getting squished like that with every footfall. I had blisters between all my toes, and my thighs felt like someone was not my thighs, my hips felt like somebody was shoving hot poker into them. Everything was aching and hurting. I couldn't eat properly because my mouth had all dried up with all the like all the sweet gels and things and chocolate that you're trying to eat, and so that was all horrible. I was taking a long time to do each stage because I wasn't that fast, so I wasn't getting a lot of sleep or recovery. And by day four, I just felt like I was getting scurvy and basically kind of dead with tiredness and just my feet killed. Felt like I was walking on knives with every step. So I decided to quit. So I quit for 3 days, and then I did the last day. So I stayed with the race. I went on the minibus. I like lay at camp. I helped out with various things, ate ice cream and had a generally nice time in the nice weather, chatted to people. And then I did the last day. So I did like, I think it was a total of like nearly 150 miles over 5 days, which was for me like a big, that's the most I've ever done really in my life. So it was an achievement in that sense, but it was a failure in the sense that I didn't actually finish the race. So I DNF'd. But I actually did a talk about it at the National Running Show, wanting to change the attitude around people DNFing, because it does mean did not finish, but it also means did not fail, because you learn a lot from these things. And I think basically what I learned was that I'm not quite capable of doing 40 miles a day for 8 days on the trot through the mountains, because I just can't really fit that kind of training into my life. I think my body's probably physically capable of it, but I don't think that's how I want my life to be. I don't want my life to just all be about running and training. I would never see anybody, and you know, I definitely couldn't do it now with Finley being so young. But yeah, I learned kind of where my limit was in what I wanted to achieve. And so after that, I decided to run around the Isle of Man instead over 6 days, and that was 100 miles. So that was kind of like anything from 15 to 20 miles a day kind of thing. And I filmed that and I put it on my YouTube channel. It was a path called the Radnor Follen, and I really enjoyed it. I just found it really, really fun. So I think I found my kind of ideal distance is about like under the marathon every day. So yeah, I think that's what I found out. I found out that that's my preferred distance, and that I'm not quite up to 40 miles a day for 8 days. Yeah. Yeah,
like you say, that's just madness, and how you can fit the training in, it is, that's very difficult to do that.
Yeah, it's really difficult, and I'm not kind of putting shade on anyone who wants to do that kind of thing, but I think everybody's got their enjoyment limit. And I think some people were doing it like for a real challenge, and they appreciated that they would be in pain, and that was part of it. But for me, I think I also learned that there's a level of pain that I want to be in as well, because I don't want to be walking along moaning all that I can think about is being in pain. I want to enjoy things. I'm too old now to beast myself, and I just want to go out and I want to have a challenging but enjoyable experience, and that will be a different level for everybody.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, in the sense that maybe a few years ago, I was very willing to push myself to really get fast times. Mm. Over recent years, I mean, I do still want to chase down some PBs, but in recent years, there's been a lot going on. And so I've been about chasing the times that I like, pushing myself to the limit that I'm comfortable with. And I totally get that.
But yeah, it's like, it's not the be all and end all anymore. The enjoyment is the more fulfilling thing for me now. You know, I'm nearly 40, so I'm like, you know, I'm not going to be getting those PBs that I used to be able to train for. So yeah, I just realized what life really means to me, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, because we like to finish on a high, what would you say your best or most memorable race is? And I will quickly say here, people never have one, so if you've got 3, 4, 5, you can set as many as you like.
Oh, it's probably the one I already mentioned, actually, the Rutland Water Half. I'm just still buzzing from that. Like, it was such a great day. It was like, it's 15 minutes from my house. It's actually, there's a map on my wall behind me, and Rutland Water is that big blue thing behind me on my wall, because it's a map of the local area. And I just really enjoyed it, and it just made me think I need to book more races. So then I went back to my husband with this like big list of races that I need to book for next year. He was like, okay, have you organized childcare for all these races? Yes, okay.
Yes, you.
Yeah, well, he does, like, we split the weekend into days, so I'll have one day and he has the other day. So if I'm going to spend the whole weekend away, then I need to like give him a weekend away, so like we do it very fairly. So yeah, there is all that. But yeah, I think that race was one of the highlights, just because I just remembered how fun it is to run, and I found strength in my body that I didn't know was there, because I'd not tested it over that distance for such a long time. And I was really proud of my body, and I was really like, I just really enjoyed it. And I just thought, wow, I achieved my time goal, which I didn't think was going to be possible. And I really enjoyed it as well. So it was like double bonus. So yeah, Rutland Water Half Marathon was really, really good. And I think one, probably not next year, because I got some plans for like the end of the summer possibly, but probably the year after, I might do the marathon. That would be a good one to do.
At the same Rutland Water as well.
Sorry,
at Rutland Water as well.
Yes, at Rutland Water as well. Yeah,
well, as well, you can, because it's only 15 minutes down the road, you can do some recce-ing. And
I've actually run like all the way around it before and cycled. I've been there so many times, as you can imagine, it being 15 minutes away. I had no idea it was so hilly. It's not hilly until you try and run fast for 13 miles.
we've been recently to do the park run.
Oh no,
it does look flat. Yeah,
the park run is completely
sorry,
flat.
I think it went there,
it cut out just slightly there, but I think you were saying that the park run's really flat. It is really flat from Normanton Church to the dam, which is where the park run is, out and back. That's really flat, and it started just the other side of the dam, so the first bit was really flat, but then it's not after that.
Just because you see the reservoir, you just think it, like,
yeah, and it's not the Lake District. People were saying to me, Claire, that it's really hilly. And I was like, it's not hilly. I've been to the Lake District. But because it's not hilly, you kind of plan yourself like that sub 2 is like a non-hilly road kind of time, isn't it, for a half marathon just after childbirth, isn't it? So to try and get that plus a load of hills as if it's a trail run, that's a bit mad. If I'd have known that, I probably would have said 2.5 hours.
Wow, it's good that you push yourself, because 15 seconds on that 2 hours, it's still
sub 2. I still got it. Very proud.
Awesome. Okay, well, thank you for that. That's a nice little introduction into you, to find out a little bit more about yourself. So we're going to go on to the main part now. And yeah, today's focus is really going to be on, for those that are maybe thinking about stepping up to the ultra distance, may have already done so, but maybe want to again go that one step further. So let's talk a bit first about what your mission is through Wild Ginger Running, and also how did it start? Obviously, you said earlier it started after being the editor of the Trail Running magazine, but kind of where do you see it going now?
So Wild Ginger Running is my YouTube channel. I do lots of chats like these on it with experts and coaches, and I give advice and inspiration about trail running and ultra running. Oh, sorry, that's my phone. I give lots of advice and inspiration about trail and ultra running on the channel. So the plan really is to, I'm kind of on a mission to inspire lots of people to go trail running, because I just think that it's the best invention in the world. Like personally, I know, you know how we've got lots of depression, anxiety, negative body image, negative feelings in the world. I kind of feel like running's not the cure for those things. I think us stopping running and stopping exercising as a species and kind of caging ourselves has led to those problems. So I think, like, although running can be considered a cure, I think it's more the other way around, that people stopping running has caused those problems. So I just think that, like, running in wilderness environments, in like in the countryside, in the fresh air, seeing views, seeing water, rivers, wildlife, animals, trees, I just think doing that is really important. And I also think it's important for our mental and physical health personally. But I also think the more connected people are to nature and the natural world, the more steps they'll take to help preserve it and to live more sustainably. So I think that it's good for the environment for people to be more connected to the outside world. So that's why I'm kind of on a mission to help more people experience the joys of trail running, just because I really hated running, and I just don't think that it necessarily needs to be this really bad, scary thing. I think more people can run than they think they can, and if you can't run, you can always walk. So I just think it's one of the most wonderful things you can do. It's relatively cheap compared to a lot of other hobbies. You don't need, I know that marketing tells you to, but you don't need to get like the latest carbon plated shoes or whatever they do now. Well, as you can see from my many shoes behind me that I'm testing just now, you don't need loads and loads of stuff. You can just go out and run, and it's very simple, and it's can be very, very cheap. Sometimes
I'm sure there'll be a lot of people listening to this.
Yeah, races have gone up, haven't they? Yeah.
But no, perfect. I think you're going to be the best person to talk through all of the questions that we've got then, and hopefully we can inspire some people out there to step up from the distance to the ultra. So with that then, let's kick off. What would you say the difference is between training for a road marathon versus training for an ultra? What should those people that want to step up from that road to that ultra distance on the trails, what should they be considering, and how should they approach it?
That's a really interesting question, because I think with road marathon training, that's actually quite a good basis for stepping up to the ultra. So if you're a person who's doing half marathons and marathons on road, then that's great endurance training, basically. It's really, really good. And I think the only real thing that you need to change to start running on trails is just to maybe take that long run off road. And often it's not necessarily about, because I know for a marathon plan, you might get like a, you know, you could do a 10 mile, you do 12 mile, you do 14, 16, 20, possibly 22, possibly not. But for trail running, there's less focus on the mileage and more focus on the time that you're out for. It's called time on feet. And so you'd just be like, oh, go and run for 4 hours and see where you get to. Because in trail running, there's a lot more differences. Like, you could reach a really tricky part because it's really rocky or really muddy, so that might slow you down, but you're still putting in that same effort in for that time scale. Or it could be super, super hilly. So there's a lots of different variables. So 10 miles on the trails could be like this and could take you like 3 hours, whereas on the roads it's more of a known quantity, so there's more known about it. So you could say, don't do a 10 mile run on the roads, and you'd pretty much get most people doing a standard time on that. Whereas if you said do 10 miles on trails, it completely depends where you go. So that's why they use time a lot. So yeah, I think for marathon runners, Like maybe you're doing like a speed session a week, you're doing some strength training every week, you're doing your long run, and you're probably doing like an enjoyment run as well. So there's not loads of difference apart from just doing more runs off road. So it's not that complicated, I don't think. I think you can make it really complicated, but actually just take some of your runs off road and then probably slow down as well. Because unless you're going for an actual place, unless you're kind of an elite athlete wanting to be at the front of looking for a podium position, it's just really, really way more acceptable off roads to even like abandon your watch and just jog along based on how you feel. Do your perceived effort rather than trying to get a pace all the time, because that would drive you mad because you'd be up and down and slipping on rocks and all sorts of things. So yeah, just maybe take the watch off for a long run and just go out for 2 hours and explore your local area instead of pounding the pavements at 9-minute miles for 10 miles. I think there's lots of similarities with the training, but I'd say just the main things would be to take it off road and to slow down a bit.
Mm-hmm. And then on that, no, because it's quite easy for a road runner to say, like you say, if you've got 10 miles this weekend, right, I can map out a route. How do you as an ultra runner then say map out 2 hours? Because like you say, 2 hours could get you
10
miles on one day, but then the next day could only get you 7 because of the route. How do you, would you normally consider the elevation like when you're planning your route as well? Because have you ever been stuck and been like, oh, I meant to be doing 2 hours today, but I've got half an hour to get back to the car?
Yeah, once you get into it, you do kind of get a feel for how far you can get in a certain time frame considering the hills. Like you might get a little bit into the map reading, so you'll notice these brown lines called contour lines, and basically the closer they are together, the steeper the hill that you're going up. But the easiest thing to do on that is to, if you want to do like say a 2 hour trail run, just go out in one direction for an hour and then turn round. As long as it's not all up hill and then all downhill, you're pretty much going to be running a similar time on the way back. So that's one of the easiest ways that you can make sure that you get that certain time into your run. But the other way is just to plan your route. You can use something like the OS mapping software or Memory Map or Komoot. Actually, that's quite a useful mapping software as well, and just follow the trails, the paths and the bridleways. We're really lucky to have so many bridleways in the UK that you can follow. You can click your route onto there and it'll tell you how far it is. And it will also tell you the ascent, so you don't have to add it all up, all the contour lines. So you can use something called Naismith's rule, which is for hikers. And when you're first starting out, that is quite a useful thing to do. It's basically you walk about 3 miles an hour, and then you add on a minute per 10 meter contour line. So for running, I'd probably do that. You'd go about maybe five miles an hour, and then, or maybe four, it depends how hilly it's going to be or how muddy it's going to be, and then add half a minute on per contour line, per 10 meter contour. So you can sort of plan it in that sense, but I would just say that's a bit more of a complicated way of doing it. And if you could, speaking to absolute beginners, I would just plan a bit shorter route than you normally would be able to do. So if you're planning say a 15 miler on trails, think, oh, it'll probably take me the same time that it will take me to run 20 miles on a road. So kind of just add a bit on. It's not really an exact science, especially if you're going to stop and take photos, or you know, you've got to cross a stream, or you know, you might find a bog that you get stuck in for a second. So it's not as an exact science, but the easiest way is to do out and backs. Yeah. And then you'll start getting more of a feel for what you can achieve in certain time frames.
Yeah, no, that's really useful. Actually, I didn't think about the out and back. And then, like you say, with experience, it's the same. I sometimes have like timed runs as well myself, like 45 minutes or 60 minutes. And again, I know roughly what distance I can cover, so we'll map out a route that would kind of cover that. So yeah, comes with time. So that's great, obviously, to know there's not too much difference. You just got to consider those few little things. But what would you say that runners should consider when booking their first race? And do you have any recommendations?
Yeah. So would this be their first trail race or their first ultra distance race?
Let's go the trail first ultra or like trail ultra?
Yeah, a trail ultra. So if it depends on your level of experience with mountains, I think, because you can get some ultra runs, which are there's some great ones run by Centurion Running down south, along South Downs Way, the North Downs Way. And they're really good for people who have come from road running, because they're really straightforward to navigate because they're on signposted trails. They've got really great checkpoints. They're really well organized, fantastic marshals. And the terrain is, it's paths and it can be rocky, it can be slippy and muddy, but it's not super, super like mountainous where you'd have to be like, oh my goodness, you know, you do need to pay attention to the weather, obviously, but it's not like the middle of remote Scotland, up Ben Nevis or something. It's not completely out of the way of civilization. So they're really good ones to start with. The paths are nice. They're not going to be like a knife edge ridge across Crib Goch or anything like that up Snowdon. So yeah, nice straightforward trails to start with. There's lots of runs done by Lakeland Trails as well in the Lake District, and they're really good because they don't just take you to the top of a mountain and then back down again like fell running is. That's like the traditional Lake District sport, but they go on easy, straightforward paths. So, you know, there's lumps and bumps, there's rocks and bits, but they're not horrendously difficult paths. They're designed to get people into the sport of trail running. So that's the Lakeland Trails. They do mainly kind of like 15K, so kind of 9-10 mile races, but they also have some half marathons and they have some marathon distances as well. There's also some races up north that Montaigne organise as well. I think that it's called the Trail something Trail Series. They're the people who organise the Lakeland 100 and the 150. So they do a series of marathons as well up north. And there's just lots of races that you can do which are nice and signposted. I think pick one which is fully waymarked by the race organisers and has lots of marshals and checkpoints. Choose one which has a generous cutoff time as well. If you're, you know, one of the kind of slower runners, then that's always really good to look for a generous cutoff time as well. And the other thing that I would consider doing your first one is to pick it in a place which inspires you. So if you feel like, oh, I've always wanted to go to Cornwall, or I've always wanted to do something in the Peak District, then look on Find a Race or SI Entries for races in that area. And if one just looks really beautiful to you, then go for it. There's also the Grizzly down south as well. That's a really good, I think that's a kind of a marathon distance. That's a really good one to start with as well. And you can always email the race organizer as well and say, look, I'm coming from a road background. What are the paths like? What's the terrain like? Have you got a video of the race that anyone's taken? And you can just have a look and see. Because the best way to train for a race is to see what kind of terrain it's on and train specifically for that terrain. So, you know, if it's along a canal towpath, then go and train on some canal towpaths. And if it's on, say, you know, small, skinny, single track paths through woods, try and find some locally to you that you can train on. So yeah, find something that inspires you, and don't make it too difficult for your first ever one.
Yeah, no, I think that's some really solid advice, because when we look to book races, we just look at ones that are popular. Distance is distance in the road world, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But when it gets to ultra, there's a lot of things that you have to consider. And like you say, a lot of people, again, would just look for the distance. And you didn't mention distance. You know, a lot of people would just be like, oh, first ultra, I'll go for 50K because that's up. But like you say, I have done one before, one ultra, and it was like a self-navigating one. And so I luckily didn't get too lost. There were a few signs, but it wasn't really signposted. I was lucky that I could just follow the people in front of me because I had a few people around me. But yeah, I just thought, oh yeah, I'll do 50K and I'll book this. But like you say, you have to consider what are the paths like? Are they signposted? Is there checkpoints? I mean, this did have brilliant checkpoints and marshals. It was fantastic. But yeah, no, I really, really liked that answer, because there's a lot of things to consider more than just how far it is
when
it
gets. Yeah, I'd probably start, if you're a road runner, I'd probably start just doing some trail races, first of all, before launching yourself into the ultra distance. Because I suppose trail running is a little bit different to ultra running in that ultras can be on trails, but they can also equally be on roads. Like, there's not loads, because you'd need loads of policing for the road crossings. That's why ultras tend to be on trails. But the terrain for ultras can be like wildly different, and the remote, like the level of safety and the level of mountain skills that you need can be wildly different depending on the ultra you choose. So yeah, and the ascent can be wildly different as well. Like the ultra tour of Snowdonia that I'm going to do 50k in May, they do a 100 miler there as well, and that's insane. Like the ascent's like 8,000 meters through the mountains, so that's obviously going to be really different to a 100 miler along the North Downs Way. So yeah, I just think, just pay a little bit of attention to the ascent, the terrain, the remote nature of the course, and yeah, do some easy stuff first before you launch yourself into unless you like a real challenge. Of course, some people love to shove themselves in the deep end, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's one that's 100 and something, maybe 40 or 50 miles along the canal path from like Birmingham.
Yeah, the Grand Union Canal Race.
That's it. I've had a couple of people onto the podcast that have done that before. And although the distance is remarkable, like you say, then switching that distance then to, like you said, the hills is just a completely different challenge. And
yeah,
training. So yeah, no, that was a great answer about what to consider when booking your first race. So what would be some kits that you would recommend? Is there anything in particular that everyone, obviously, like we said, you said earlier about marketing tells you you need everything, but what would be some of the key things that you think people would need?
So let's just figure that we have our comfy shoes.
Yeah.
For trails, you need a little bit more grip, and for ultras, maybe you want to go a bit more padded. There's so many different schools of thought on like minimalism, maximalism, padded, not padded, drop, not drop, and all this business. But say that you've found your comfy shoes and you're happy with the grip, you're happy with the drop from heel to toe, and you're not getting any injuries from them. The next thing that I would probably get for trail and ultra running would be a decent waterproof jacket, and then a little backpack to put everything in. Because once you start running longer distances, and once you start running more remote places, like it doesn't even matter about the distance, just, you know, you're going up a mountain, you're there for an hour, there's no different to being up a mountain for an hour to 6 hours, you still need like safety stuff. So you need some little thing to put some food, some drink, put your jacket in when you're not using it, maybe you've got like a spare insulating layer, you've got your phone, you've got your GoPro if you're me, and so you need something to put it all in. So a little race vest, 5 liters, or if you're going out, you know, once you get a bit more enthusiastic about this kind of thing, you might want to start going out in winter, so you need to take a bit more clothing with you, a bit more food, so 10 liter backpack. But mainly get away with like a 5 liter little running pack, lots of pockets up front so you can access things easily, a few zip pockets at the side for some more food. That's what I would take. And a waterproof jacket, you just want nice, lightweight, packable waterproof jacket with a good hood on it. And when I say waterproof, it means something with taped seams. So if you look in your jacket, you can see that there's seams sewing it together. If you can see the seam, sort of like it'll be flat locked, but it might be sort of flapping around, that's not taped. If you can see that there's bits of tape over the seams in your jacket, that means it's taped seams. That's on a lot of mandatory kit lists for trail and ultra races. so you need one of those. Around, it's, if you're going to do something like really remote, you'd probably want a bit more of a bomb-proof kind of mountaineering-y type jacket. So you might be looking at like 300 grams for your jacket. But if you're going on, like, if you just want an emergency jacket to put on then 100, 150 grams would be a good weight to look at. I'm talking about women here. For men, it might be like 200 grams. But yeah, something around the 100, 150 grams mark for a lightweight jacket is really, really useful. So yeah, those are the two items that I would first get. You've probably already got a watch, haven't you, as a roadrunner?
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, I have a little pack. I have one from Salomon, if that's how you mean.
Yeah, Salomon, yeah.
And yeah, I love it. Like you say, it's got all pockets everywhere. And I just take it even out for just a lot of like long road running. Because
yeah,
closer the summer. So I've got water, I can take my phone, I can take all my gels. I don't have to then worry about shorts with pockets. I can literally take everything in. So yeah, I think those vests, and as well, they are an investment, but they last.
Yeah, yeah, they really do. Yeah, the Salomon ones are quite expensive, aren't they?
For like 3 years.
Yeah.
What would you say then if someone's looking at sort of more like an entry level vest? What kind of brands would you direct people towards?
I would definitely direct people to a relatively new brand called Harrier. I actually helped design the running packs for them. They do a really nice 5 liter pack called the Kerber 5 liter, and it's only £54. Yeah. So I would definitely go that direction. If you want even cheaper, then Decathlon, Kalenji, they do quite a few different running packs, but I prefer the Harrier ones because they're just like really, really set up for runners. And there's just a few features of the Kalenji ones which I don't think are as easy to use whilst you're on the run. So get the Harrier Kerber 5 liter, everybody.
Perfect, love it. So now we're going back to sort of like training. What would be the furthest distance that people would, and obviously this is very relative to whatever distance you're doing, but let's actually, now I say this, you spoke about time. So if you have got a race booked, say you're doing a 50K and you foresee you're going to take 7 hours, how far in terms of distance or time should people be training to? Like, do you know when people say if you're doing 26 miles or 26.2 miles, normally people try to get up to the 18 to 20. What's the comparison to ultras?
Yeah, so this is really interesting because there's lots of different schools of thought and there's a lot of people that do things different ways. Ultra running it's hard to explain. It's not only the training that you do that season, but it's also the training that you've done for years and years. So you'll find that a lot of ultra runners who are super successful are actually kind of like in their 40s and maybe in their 50s because they've got experience and this huge endurance background and endurance base. Because in ultra running, it's not just about the physical training, but it's also about the mental training, the gear, the preparation, the conditions underfoot on race day. There's so many more factors that come into play, sometimes navigation, as you said, on your first ultra. So it's hard to say what level people should get to in training, because you know, say if you've got a 100 miler coming up, you're not going to train, you're not going to do 80 miles, are you? I mean, like, oh, some people might, but you're just not. Like, how I go about it is that I kind of keep myself marathon fit, and then you just pop up for the races. You just like it, and it's that simple. And a lot of ultra runners talk about hiking as well. So instead of a lot of running training, if you're doing these really long distances, like 60 miles, 80 miles plus through to the 100 kind of thing, you're actually going to be doing quite a bit of walking. Unless you're an elite athlete that's podiuming, you're going to be doing quite a lot of walking, especially up the hills. It might be with poles as well. So a lot of even the really elite athletes talk about one of their biggest tips is go hiking with a big heavy backpack on for hours in the mountains. So, you know, like do a day hike, do 6 hours in the mountains. If you've got a 50K that's going to take you 7 or 8 hours, then go hiking for 5 hours and gradually build up from there. If you've got a lot of time on your hands, you can do like back-to-back weekends where you do say 9 hours hike on one day and then 5 hours hike on the next day. But not everybody has that much time in their lives. So I would say do a lot of long, slow running and a speed session, a lot of strength work. But yeah, if you can, and then I would just like do the longest runs in training. If I was training for an ultra, I probably on a general weekend, I probably wouldn't do much more than 20 miles. I probably wouldn't. I would then just book, say I'd book a 30 mile race 1 month, 2 months later, I'd book a 50 mile race. And 2 months after that, I'd book like maybe a 70 mile race. And then leave it at that year. Then the following year, I'd kind of do the same again. I'd book a few 50s, like maybe 250s, and then I'd have like 100 in the sights. And I might just do a 50, I might just do a 70, and then I might just do 100. But I think you don't do too many in a year. I think maybe 3 ultras per year is good. I think people can get a bit over enthusiastic. So I wouldn't do more than like 3 in a year personally. I mean, everybody's different, but I think gradually is the rule of ultra running, and just have like one or two A races a year and build up in through the races. But in training during the week, I wouldn't be doing more than marathon training, really. I can't fit more in than that. So yeah, I hope that I get a coach though. If you get a coach, there's some really good coaches out there. There's like Christian Morgan, Tim Piggott, Marcus Scottney, Damien Hall. They're all really good ultra running coaches. You can get a lot out of yourself. I know it's expensive, but you can get a lot of out of yourself with a coach, because they'll just tailor the training to what you specifically need. And also do loads of strength training as well. I think if you're going to be doing, if you want to step up the distance, you need to support the body with strong muscles, strong musculature throughout. So I would be focusing on, rather than add like a fifth run to the week, like I usually do 3 runs a week because I can't really fit more in than that. But most like dedicated runners, they're probably doing like 4 runs a week, aren't they? Rather than try to do a fifth run or even that fourth run, I'd do a strength session of like half an hour, maybe twice a week, working on strength using quite heavy weights. Plyometrics as well. That's lots of jumping around. That's also a really good plan.
Yeah, amazing. But yeah, it just goes to show this is hard, isn't it? There's no one size fits all with everyone.
Yeah, getting a coach and also just doing it and knowing what you can sustain, because you know some people will be able to do like 120 miles a week and not get injured, but some people might only be able to manage 50 and like, or at the moment I'm doing about 20 miles a week, and I don't think I'm going to be doing much more than 25 miles a week, 30 miles a week in training for this 50k that I've got coming up. I just don't see it happening. So yeah, I just think a lot of the training comes with years and years and years of experience and just going slowly on race day and just keeping going and just knuckling down to it.
Yeah. So on that, this is kind of like a question off of that question and whether this can be answered or not. But one of our hub members asked, like, you know, with marathons, you normally say 16 to 20 weeks. Do they say there's a time frame for ultras, that do they say like, oh, for 100 miles, you should train for a year, 18 months, for 50K, you should train for half a year? Is there kind of like a set standard in the ultra world?
Kind of, yeah. It depends what experience you've had with endurance before. So like if you're like an endurance hiker, like mountain walker, then it might take you less time, but there's nothing's going to go wrong if you do it gradually. The injuries come when you do stuff really quickly. So like say you're a marathon runner and you think, oh, next year I'll do 100. I just wouldn't advise that. I would take 2 years to work up to doing 100 miles. And that's as a runner, as a complete beginner, I'd probably like 5 years minimum. But yeah, I mean, why rush it? Like, there's no need to rush. There's loads of races out there. You don't need to jump in at the deep end. Do a load of 50Ks, do a year of 50Ks. Then the following year, carry on with those 50Ks, but do a 50. And then the following year, carry on with, you know, do a couple of 50s and then do your 100. And then I don't know if if there's many people that do like a 100-mile race every single year, I think a lot of people use it as like, oh my God, I've done a 100-mile race. I don't know if there's loads of people that go out doing 100 miles all the time. So you might find that you've got a preferred distance, like I like the 50K, and you might just settle on that. But yeah, there's no limits really. But yeah, gradually, I would say. yeah, you're never going to go wrong if you do it gradually. I know it's a bit boring, but it's just the truth. There's no shortcuts.
No, good answer. So let's talk about fuel, because I think this is a big topic for moving on from sort of like road marathons to ultras. So what is the common fuel for ultra running? Do people use a lot of gels, or do they start using different stuff? I know, I appreciate, again, it's going to be not all one size fits all, but what are the common things that people like to use in trail and ultra running?
Yeah, so working on the premise that you're jogging like slowly and often walking rather than going all out for getting that sub 4-hour marathon PB or whatever, gels, a lot of the elite athletes do use gels, but even they, after about 6 or 7 hours of using gels, they'll start to get a like taste fatigue, and they won't want to get them down. So they start to use more normal food. And for the more kind of normal runners, some ultra runners might want to use normal food throughout. So you want things that are tasty, that you're going to be able to eat on the run. So use them all in training to find out what you can stomach. And you want something that's easy to actually eat, like not something that's going to freeze or melt or crumble away. And you want something that's not going to be too easily squished as well in your running pack. So I find pizza is a really good one. You can also pimp the pizza with extra cheese and like extra like different bits of topping, and you can cut it up and you can put it on top like that. So it's like a pizza sandwich, and you can wrap it in some like tin foil or some old plastic bag that you find, and just pop it in the side of your rucksack. It's really nice because you're running for such a long time, often you want savory food as well as sweet stuff. So I personally don't really like gels. I have found one gel that I do like. It's from Morton, so they're really, really nice. Eliud Kipchoge actually uses them, and Kilian Jornet as well. He's one of the top trail and ultra runners of all time. And so yeah, anything you can think of really. I've once done an ultra munching on a quiche that didn't fare too well in the backpack, and it kind of fell apart upon eating, but it was delicious. Other people take like nuts and raisins, trail mix. They take probably not apples and fruit, but because that's a bit squishy. If you've got checkpoints on an ultra that you can pick up food from your support crew, you might want like slippery foods, because you start to get a bit of a dry mouth towards the later stages of a really long race. So like baked beans go down really well, rice pudding, tinned peaches. Some people even have fish and chips. Depends what you can stomach. And yeah, just some people take boiled potatoes with a little pinch of salt. People wrap up rice, like squish rice into little balls and eat that as well. Yeah, and all your usual cereal bars, flapjack, jelly babies, anything you can stomach really. Basically, it's your opportunity to go down that aisle of the supermarket that you never usually allow yourself down, because you end up buying loads of crap. So yeah, just buy anything that you really fancy and test it all out in your training, because sometimes at mile 50 what can seem lovely at mile 10 doesn't sit well at mile 50. So just try it all out in training and take a wide variety of food, crisps as well, and malt loaf. That's really good as well.
Yeah, sounds like one person said to me once, doing an ultra is like a walking picnic. So
yes.
That's it. I guess there is, it's about just getting the right fuel at the right time. I think with ultras, isn't it? It's about taking, like, because like you say, you go a bit slower, your energy levels might feel okay, but it's taking on fuel early enough that you don't then crash.
Yeah. Eat little and often, yeah, and don't wait until you're hungry, because that means you're like too hungry. And drink as well, like drink little and often as well. The advice these days is to drink to thirst, yeah, rather than like gulping loads down at once. Just keep sipping.
Yeah, basically it's just like you say, an opportunity to eat whatever whenever.
Yes.
When I did this one ultra that I've done, I remember at the last aid station, the same thing, like I'd taken quite a few gels, I'd had quite a lot of malt loaf, so it was like the overload of sweet stuff. And on this last aid station, they had, like, you know, the like mini pretzels.
Yum.
And I literally just stood there, kept putting my hand in this bowl and just eating these pretzels. And I was like, I think I better make a move and actually like finish this race. Otherwise, I'm going to stand here all day. But, like, it's just the savoury and the saltiness of it was just a taste sensation in my mouth.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah, you can, cheese is a good one as well, and Jaffa cakes. Yeah, Jaffa cakes aren't too sweet and cheese is kind of salty. So yeah, you need a bit of salty stuff.
You're just making me hungry now. So going back to like your pack, what one thing would you unexpectedly advise every ultra runner to have on them in their pack?
Oh yeah, I was reading this question earlier. I was like, I genuinely don't know what to say. But I have seen some people on their ultra running packs, they pack like a little mascot, like a little bear or like a little cuddly toy that just is like on the front of their pack or maybe on the back of their pack. And it's just like quite cute and it's a talking point. So if you're jogging along and you just see someone's got like a little mouse on their back, it's just something to say, oh, what's this? And who's that? And they're like, oh yeah, like that's my son's. He gave it me before I did this race. Or, oh, I always run with Mr. Mouse because he, you know, it's my lucky charm. So yeah, it's just more of an unusual one. I don't have one myself. But I just thought, oh yeah, that's a good thing to carry. And if you didn't want to carry an actual physical thing, my advice would be to write something on your hand, like a mantra or something that you know will get you round, you know, like your reason for doing the race in the first place, so that you're going to have some highs and you're going to have some lows probably because it's such a long time. So it's good to remind yourself of why you're doing it, so in those low moments you can read that and think, nope, I'm going to carry on.
Yeah, love that. I love the mascot idea, that's a brilliant one.
Yeah.
We've had another question from one of our hub members saying, so in races, especially ultras, you get different highs and lows. How do you ride through them both? And actually, like, how do you, like, obviously getting through the lows can be quite tough, but how do you actually ride the highs and can you predict when they're going to happen?
No, you can't really predict at all. And even like, you know, like when you finish a really long, like a multi-day ultra, if you finish it, you can actually be quite sad because you've just had such a great time that you didn't want it to actually end, even if it was a bit painful towards the end. So it's really hard to tell how to, you can't predict the highs or the lows, I wouldn't say. Sometimes it can be peeing down, like torrential rain, blinding winds, and you can be having a great time because you're warm inside your great waterproof that you've got and you're just jogging along with a load of other people going, yeah, we got this. So you can never predict it. So I was just talking to an ultra running coach who's done a lot of running on the Appalachian Trail, actually, Christian Morgan. And I think what he said to me earlier today just rings true. And that's just, you just got to be flexible and be prepared for it not to, just be prepared to be flexible because you don't know what's going to happen. And that's the joy of these longer races, I think, is like in 4 hours in a marathon, there's a limited number of things that could go wrong, and you don't have as much time to think about things and to have the highs and lows. But over the course of 8 hours or maybe even 10 hours or maybe even through the night, if you're doing a super long one, there's lots of time to think about stuff. There's lots of time to get highs and lows. I'd say if you're having a low point, check if you've eaten or drunken recently, because that can be a major factor in having an energy dip. So check your energy levels, eat something. If you are having a low, you could, if there's someone around, chat to them, talk to them, talk to yourself. If not, read your little thing that you've written on the back of your hand, talk to yourself, G yourself on a bit with a bit of external communication. And if you're having the highs, just enjoy the highs. Like, don't be afraid of the highs. Just if you feel like singing at the top of your voice at the top of a mountain, then just do it. Like, yeah, ultra runners are mad people. They're not going to judge you.
I think all runners, we're all mad, aren't we?
Yeah, we're all a bit mad, aren't we? Yeah.
Love it. Amazing. So yeah, just embrace those highs. So moving back onto actual races, you've mentioned some great stuff here, and I feel like I'm going to have to make a note of everything you've mentioned so far about different ones. But a couple of questions in terms of races. We'll start off with, like, what are your bucket list races? Obviously, you said earlier that maybe your training, you might not be going for those races now like you used to, but is there anything that's still on your bucket list?
Yeah, so what I really like to do is, if there's a really long race that I don't think that I'd ever be able to do or want to do, sometimes I go and do it over a series of days. So for a long time, there's a race called the UTMB, which is the Ultra Tour de Mont Blanc, which is very famous in the trail and ultra running world. It's in France. It starts from Chamonix in France, and it goes through Switzerland and also Italy. And it goes around Mont Blanc, basically. It's 100 miles and a bit more, and like 10,000 meters of ascent. And they start on the Friday night at 6 p.m. and they go through the night. The top men will take like 20 hours. The top women, like 23, 24 hours. So they're coming in like in the afternoon of Saturday, having run through the night. And then all the like normal runners, in inverted commas, will be coming in like over the course of the next night and even like until 4 p.m. on the Sunday. So that's like from 6 p.m. on Friday till 4 p.m. on Sunday. They are not really running, they're hiking the race and running the downhills, presumably. And I just think that's amazing, but it's utter madness to spend like half of that race in darkness so you can't see all those amazing views. So what I'd really like to do is do that over 6 days, so you're doing like 20 miles a day, and then by the time you've finished, you've got a full appreciation of the course, but you haven't killed yourself and you've really enjoyed it, and you haven't seen, like, it's not been dark, so you can see every single view possible, and you can stay overnight and have some nice food and some beers. I think that would be a really nice way to do the UTMB. And a lot of people do hike the Tour of Mont Blanc, so it's not an unusual thing to do, but I'd really like to do that. There's also a race called the Dragon's Back Race here in the UK. It's in Wales, and it goes from the top of Wales to the bottom of Wales, from Conwy Castle to a different castle in the south, I can't remember, Cardiff Castle, something like that, in the south. And I've always wanted to do that race, but it's like 40 miles a day up like the most treacherous mountain terrain that you can imagine. And this coming year, they're going to do a half dragon, which they're calling the Hatchling. And it's half the distance. So it's more like 20 miles a day. So it's always under the marathon distance a day. But with the ascent involved, it's still going to take like 6-7 hours for me to do. So I think that I'm going to do that. That's going to be my A race for next year. That's on my bucket list. And it's not the full Dragon's Back, but I think it's a good start anyway. I don't think that I'll ever be doing the full Dragon's Back, but it's nice to be able to experience some of the race by just doing half of it. And there's loads of other races, like the Ultra Tour of Snowdonia. That's part of the UTMB series. I really want to do that. I just like to do different races, any that come up. There's tons, but good ultras, iconic ultras would be stuff like the Arc of Attrition in Cornwall. There's the Grand Union Canal race as well, from Birmingham to London. There's the Ultra Tour of Snowdonia. They do a 100-mile route there. There's the Kinloch races at Kinloch Leven, the Skyline Scotland series as well. They do the Glencoe Skyline. That's one of the iconic trail races there. That's really technical, mountainous. You go along Annaghegach, which is a scrambling route of great difficulty. So it's not for the faint-hearted. But they do trail races at that event as well. There's just loads. All the Lakeland Trails events are great. There's Dark and White Peak events in the Peak District. There's the Jurassic Coast 3-day challenge. That's VO2 max events. There's the Pilgrim's Way, and there's the Druids Challenge. That's an amazing race. I've done that before. That's X Energy events. And then there's Endurance Life events as well that do loads of coastal stuff, like down in Cornwall and like Anglesey, like area as well. There's loads. Maverick events as well, they're really good. there's, there's, there's tons Monster. I also really want to go, I want to do one of the Black Trail Runners events as well. They've got an event called Black to the Trails coming up, so I really want to go and do that as well. So yeah, there's, I just like doing different races. It's a good way to see the world, trail and ultra running. So yeah, it's a good way to see the country and see the world, because, you know, if you choose a waymarked course and it's a bit of a handhold into a new adventurous place that you can discover easily. Yeah.
No, that's brilliant. You've given people lots of ideas there. And so, I have heard of some of those before. So I'd heard of, obviously heard of UTMB. Most people should have heard of that. I have heard of Dragon's Back. I've known someone that's tried to do it.
Yeah.
A couple of our listeners, one of their friends. But obviously, yeah, it just sounds insane. But yeah, I've heard of things like the Maverick races. There's certain companies that you get to know.
Yeah. About. Oh, right. Yeah, on the Hardmoors as well. Have you heard of the Hardmoors? They do a lot of stuff on the Cleveland Way, which is like around Scarborough, Whitby area. They do like a 15, 30, 50, 80, 100 milers. They do, and they're doing a 200 miler next year as well, which sounds insane.
Well, as well, we went to Dorset last year and I fell in love with the Jurassic Coast. So
beautiful.
I would one day like to do, whether it was a race or maybe like a walking event.
Yeah.
Like I would like to walk, like it just looks stunning. So I would like to, even if it was just a walking marathon.
Yeah. They do an event, VO2 Max do the Jurassic Coast over 3 days. So it's just over the marathon every day for 3 days. A lot of ascent. My friend's done it and she said it was brutal but beautiful.
Okay, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's like September, October time. Okay. Yeah.
I'll have a look at that one then.
Yeah, it looks great, that one. And there's also the Lakes Traverse and the Northern Traverse as well by, I think, yeah, and Cape Wrath Ultra, they do all those ones. So yeah, there's loads. If you go on SI Entries or Find a Race, they're all on there.
That was going to be my next question. Where do you find stuff? So Find a Race, is it SI, is in the two letters, SI?
Yeah, SI and then Entries. And that's got a lot of trail, fell and ultra races in, like off-road type stuff, yeah. So you also find my race, which is the Neen Valley Trails. It's only 10 miles and 20 miles, but they're in Fotheringhay, which is near Peterborough, which is on the map, just like down there a bit. That's in June this year.
Amazing.
Yeah, so beginner trail runs.
One of the last questions then, how do you decide on, like, cause obviously you've mentioned so much there and there's such a variety, but how do people then normally decide on races? This is another question from our hub members. Do you base it on distance, the sites, cutoffs? How do people normally go about picking their races?
It's good that you mentioned cutoffs there, because some races do have much more generous cutoffs than others. For a beginner runner, if you're a beginner trail runner but you're super super fast, you might not need to look at the cutoffs. But if you're, you know, worried about that kind of thing, then definitely look for generous cutoffs. But it's just completely up to you. It's just, how far are you willing to travel? How much are you willing to pay? And then also the cutoff times as well. It might be that you can find one close to you for your first one. So like if you live in London, perhaps there's a lot of races on the South Downs and the North Downs, the Chilterns, that kind of thing. If you live in Manchester, maybe one in Lake District might be more up your street. I think a lot of it is to do with proximity as well. Sometimes it's what your friends have been doing as well. So like you can join these Facebook groups. I'm in this one called Trail and Ultra Running UK, which is a really, really nice Facebook group. But it's not like one of these really annoying judgy ones where someone posts something and everyone jumps on them immediately. This is one where you can actually genuinely type in your query and you'll get like 20, 80 responses back. So if you typed in there, I'm looking for a nice event in this area in this time of year, you get tons of people telling you all sorts of races that aren't even on Find a Race and SI Entries. You get like little local races, which often tend to be cheaper as well and kind of a bit more low-key, and like more cakes at the end, you know, that kind of old-fashioned race kind of business. There might not be a medal or a t-shirt or anything like that, but, you know, much more low-key and really nice friendly participants. So I would suggest joining one of these Facebook groups if you're really keen to find out more about trail and ultra running, and watch Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel as well. That's a really good way to find out more about races. And if you write me a comment on any of my videos, then I'll reply. I'm always on there. And if you've got any questions, then I can field them that way as well.
Amazing. And you've just brought it all the way around to the end. The last podcast. So yeah, tell us a little bit more about people, where they can find you on YouTube, podcast, your book. Where can everyone?
So the book is on Amazon. So if you follow me on Instagram, it's Wild Ginger Running on Instagram, and I've got one of these Linktree things. So in the bio, there's a Linktree thing, and it shows you my latest film. It shows you a free 10K trail running plan that I've done with Vert Run. There's links to my website and the book as well. The book's really good because it's just like distilled all the information that I've learned over many, many years talking to athletes and coaches into one handy place. It's got training plans from 5K to 50K as well, and nutrition recipes, injury prevention, strength work, what gear to buy, tips from elite athletes and coaches, and some really good recommended races as well. So there's like tons in there for everybody to use. There's a bit on first aid kits there as well, so it's really, really useful, the book. So a little bit about navigation as well in there, and then on YouTube it's Wild Ginger Running. So it's just type in Wild Ginger Running and loads of videos from me should come up. I'm always doing videos. There's loads in there. And if you've got a particular query, the best thing to do is to Google. So get in your Google search engine, and whatever your query is, like what waterproof for trail, like best waterproof for trail running, type in that and then put Wild Ginger Running after it. And if I've got anything on that query that you've got, it should come up in the YouTube, in the Google search thing below. So like you get the little videos, don't you, below, so it should come up in there for you to have a look at. And there, the podcast is basically anything that I do on YouTube where I'm chatting to a coach or an elite athlete. It's kind of like an hour long, so I'll then put that on the podcast. I do the podcast through Podbean, but it's just available through your usual podcast provider. So just Google Wild Ginger Running just search Wild Ginger Running in your usual podcast provider, and it should just come up with the latest one. So that's it. It's like follow me on Instagram. Subscribe on YouTube, it's absolutely free, and check out the podcast, and you can listen to it on your long runs, and buy the book if you fancy it as well. So there's lots of ways to get involved in trail running, and I wish everybody a very enjoyable and challenging experience.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Claire. It's been really interesting, and I think if anything you've shown that it's not that scary and not too daunting if you're willing to give it a try.
Yeah, hopefully not. It's really, really friendly community as well. I forgot to say that. Like, everybody's very welcoming. Doesn't matter what shape, size, color, any background that you're from. Everybody's really welcoming. So don't be afraid to just give it a go.
Yeah. Oh no. Well, it's been so lovely having you on. Thank you so much, and good luck with the rest of your training and everything. Sounds like you've got a few events coming up, and yeah, I hope that we've inspired some people to take to the trails.
Thank you. It's been a joy to be on. Thank you very much.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.